This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Raising Game. Good morning. This is Frieda Liu, and this is a Monday where we always have folks from Leadernomics and team joining us today. My very good friend, Professor George Kohlreiser, is back. He's a professor at IMD in Switzerland. He's written two books, with the latest being Care to Dare, and you know, he's written many, many articles as well. And he'll be speaking at TED in June. This is exciting. Good to have you back, George.
Thank you, Frieda. It's like coming back home.
You know, and we always have a lot to talk about, and you know, you've got a couple of topics with me, and I just thought, you know, let's focus on one, because I know this chat will always sort of flow into new things. And one of the things that I want to talk about was this whole concept that you've come on air talking about before, about the cycle of bonding.
Yeah.
and grief.
Yeah.
Right. And this is, I guess, a little bit more real right now when we talk about what's happened with MH370, the missing flight. Families are in pain, colleagues are in pain. But before we get into that, this whole idea of the cycle of bonding and how it relates to grief, you know, what's it all about?
It's part of life. You have to connect to people, to places, to homes, to goals, all the things that you can connect to. Mm-hmm. And then out of that comes these special relationships where you emotionally link. So you draw energy from that which you are attached to. And we call that bonding.
Mm-hmm.
People, homes, goals, etc. And then there's always going to be that separation. Something's going to break that bond. Even if you have a sibling relationship for 90 years, one person leaves, a job with retirement, leaders come and go, and then that brings open the grief. And grief is the process you go through to be able to come back and reconnect again. Without grief, life would not work.
Right.
You see, if you stop grieving, you can't bond again. The brain hates pain. The brain hates pain. So bonding is good. It's pleasurable. But it's not going to be without some point having pain. So you have to train your brain to accept pain and be able to go through that grief.
Right. Okay. Now, that's a bit of a, you know, it takes a big person to do that. And that's why I don't have dogs anymore. I'm serious. It just hurts me too much, you know. And okay, so with this whole idea, and you talk about grief, and we've had this discussion as well, and you go online, six stages of grief, seven stages of grief, but how many stages of grief are there?
Well, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was a classic writer. Mm-hmm. She was a friend, a colleague, and someone I worked with a lot. She was a teacher also. She talked about five, but really you can find sometimes seven, but I've designed it into 10 because we want to bring out the emotional part of it. So it goes from the denial all the way through the emotional phases to the eventual acceptance, to the forgiveness, and finally gratitude.
Okay. Can we just go? Okay. So the first one is denial.
Then typically comes the emotional range. It can be anger. It can be sadness. It can be fear. And it shows up as anxiety, or it shows up as depression, or it shows up as just anger. And then comes the acceptance, the starting to rationalize it in a way that, okay, this is the way it is, but that doesn't mean you still have a way to go, because then comes the acceptance. Then you have to go through reconnecting again.
Okay.
You have to come back to the joy of life, to the joy of work. And then after this reconnection of some kind comes the forgiveness of self, of others, wherever that is located. And that's part of all cultures, is forgiveness. And then coming back to the joy of life, the joy of work, the joy of whatever, and ultimately gratitude for being alive. Not that something would happen, not that you would feel gratitude for what you lost, but what you have learned from it.
Mm.
And through that whole process, Frieda, this is what I most would want your listeners to understand. It builds resilience because there is no escape from pain in life. You want to live a full, joyful, energetic life. There's going to be losses, and you have to be willing to accept those when they come.
Right. So, okay. So when you talk about anxiety, it could be anger, sadness.
Yeah. Well, it shows up with people who start worrying, or they start having a dread about the future. They start worrying about what's going to happen, anticipated grief.
Mm.
So it activates, if I can lose this, I might lose something else. And that's even worse than the actual loss, to live every day in the anticipation of a loss. And then the anger is just this fundamental kind of overactivation of the amygdala or the startle reflex, where you just are defending against things. And then the depression is where you just lose your curiosity. Mm. When you lose curiosity, that's a very, very significant sign that grief is happening.
Ah, okay. So, you know, when you go through this, some people never go through the stages, and that's why
they lose the joy of life. They never get over the loss of a job. They never get over a loss of
depression.
And so they don't attach with if you accept the brain hates pain, which we know, but you train the brain to learn to seek pain or be willing to accept it because of the joy that comes with the bond.
Right.
No pain, no gain.
Right.
Or as my son always says, no pain, you stay the same.
No pain, you stay the same.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I was reading a book as well, you know, called Mindset. You know, whether it's a fixed mindset,
Carol,
or
I know her very well.
You know her, okay. Yeah,
so open mindset or closed mindset,
yeah.
Growth mindset or
fixed mindset.
Yeah. We need curiosity. And watch the people who live to be 90, 95, 100, 105. They always have curiosity. They have that growth mindset. They're always open to bonding to their grandchildren, to their houses, to their flowers. You can bond to anything.
To their flowers. All right. Okay. So I just want to connect this back to what's happened with the families and the staff as well. You know, what do you think, okay, maybe in the case of the staff, what would be the right thing to do right now to, because I'm sure a lot of people have said, I've lost my colleagues and we don't know where they are. There's this, you know, what do you think would be going through their heads at the moment, and what should the organization do?
Well, for the engaged employees, the employees who care, and there are most who do care, this would be a traumatic experience. My company, my organization, my family has participated in giving other people pain and being able to have this catastrophe. But the horrible process is that they can't find the plane. So there is no closure possible. If you find the plane, then you can get closure. It's like someone who never finds the body, never sees the end. So you have to, in your mind, at some point, close the door and be able to move forward. So they may be angry that something like this would happen. They may be depressed or sad. They may be filled with fear that it could happen again. But what has to happen, the employees have to go through the experience of rebonding. And you cannot grieve alone. This is the lesson we know from all cultures. And here in Malaysia, you know that from the ancient part of your culture. You grieve in families. You grieve in tribes. You grieve together. So talk about it. Get out what you feel, what you concern, but then move on. Move on. Not too soon, but certainly not too late.
You know, you talk about, there were some cases as well, I think it was TWA.
Yeah.
But at least they know it's over.
They found the plane. They found most of the bodies, and so they could bring closure.
So this,
and Swiss Air had another one up at Halifax. The same sort of thing.
So in this case, how do you come to closure? Uh-huh. For, you know, because there's always going to be a question mark.
Well, you have to be able to not be a hostage to your own mindset, to your own emotions. So you can always feel the way you want to feel. You ultimately have choice. Choice is happiness, and you choose happiness. And so at some point you have to say, I choose not to be angry. I choose to let this go. I turn it over to God or a higher power. I do what I can, but I'm not a hostage. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're a hostage, that's going to create problems. So you let that go, and you go back, if you're an employee, making Malaysia Airline the best airline that it can be, and you come back to full commitment.
All right. We'll discuss a little bit more about that, and you know what the organization can do in terms of talking to the staff, and what are some things they can do. Right after this, I'm here with Professor George Kohlreiser from IMD in Switzerland. This is Race Again, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments, BFM 89.9. 89.9.
Good morning. This is Frida Liu. It's Raise Your Game. I'm here speaking to Professor George Kohlreiser from IMD in Switzerland, and it's our Science of Building Leaders series. And Professor Kohlreiser has written two books, with the latest being Care to Dare. We've spoken about it when it was first launched, and he'll be speaking at TED in June. I look forward to watching you on YouTube. Our discussion today is in the cycle of bonding, and you know, we were connecting it back to grief. And you know, earlier on, you were stating about the different stages of grief. There's denial, there's anxiety, anger, acceptance, reconnecting, I took notes, forgiveness, joy of life, gratitude, and, you know, building, you know, because gratitude builds resilience. Notes for myself.
Oh, you are a wonderful student, and now you're a teacher.
You know, so we were talking about... maybe you can share that example. You know, we were relating this to MH370, what the staff can do, or what the management can do to make sure that, you know, the staff are okay, because they feel a loss.
Yeah.
with their colleagues and all. But you had an example with Swissair.
Yeah, after the Halifax event, and I lived in Switzerland at the time, Swissair never got over that. That was a grief that went very, very deep in their identity. This could not happen to a Swiss plane. Secondly, Swiss Air employees were like a family. Many of them knew the crew that was on board. And that should also be taken into account, that the Malaysia Airline employees who knew people on that are going to have a special grief, because they not only have the grief of that, but they could imagine themselves possibly being on that plane.
Mm.
It could happen to anybody who was a flight attendant or a pilot. And then eventually what happened with Swiss Air is they started going into high risk taking by a CEO who bought Sabena and so forth. The company eventually went bankrupt and was taken over by Lufthansa. Many people attribute that to never getting over the grief and never getting back to a solid business strategy, going into high risk endeavors that were doomed to disaster.
Okay, so if you were involved with MAS today, what would your advice be to management and how to, you know, win that? Build that bond back with the staff.
Okay. Well, first of all, to get as much accurate information as out there, and as somebody who is living outside Malaysia, it's been very confusing what actually happened. So from the CEO down, to be able to communicate accurately, and then the boss sit down with each team and talk, how do you feel about this? What do you think about this? What are we going to do from here? What are we willing to commit? Because grieving cannot happen alone.
Mm.
So the bosses talk to the bosses, and it just moves up.
Right.
And you give recognition, and then you get the emotions out. The worst is when emotions stay inside, and they then block the person either with anger or fear, that they become discouraged with the organization, or they just become depressed. And we had two horrible examples of suicide this summer in Switzerland. The CEO of Swisscom committed suicide, and the CFO. That's a different issue, but that also had to do with what was happening in the organization. So it would be possible that even suicide could become a part of some of the manifestation of despair or other kinds of emotions. So it is about how to express that, but then looking to the future. And Frida, it's a very delicate space to be able to understand the past and accept the past and have feelings about the past, but also move forward.
Right.
And the person who discovered the behavioral economics won the Nobel Economics Prize. He's in a new research on happiness, and it's connected to grief. And the question is, how happy are you now? See, the mass employees, and of course they have grief for all the people who died,
right,
all their fellow, but how to come back to the happiness of the moment.
Hmm.
Life does not work if you cannot say, I am happy now. So on a scale of 0 to 10, how happy are you? And the answer should be 10.
Hmm.
And then you look at your life. How happy are you in your life? And again, from 0 to 10. Now, most people will say 8 or 9 because they have regrets. They have things they wish had been different, which are all signals of grief. How do you let go? How do you move forward and get both to a 10? I'm happy right now to 10.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy in my life to 10, even though I've had all kinds of losses, catastrophes. And like the lady from the Boston bombing who lost her leg,
mm-hmm.
she was devastated, but she's back to dancing on the stars and to teaching handicapped people. And she says,
wow,
that event was the best thing that ever happened to me. It inspired me.
Mm-hmm.
So we can take a tragedy and turn it into something that inspires us. Now, this is very challenges the mindset. Right. You have to have a growth mindset for this. Mm. But ultimately, it's resilience. And the thing is, once you go through pain, mm. and the deeper the pain, each time later will be easier.
Mm.
That's very important to remember. Resilience. Courage.
Right.
Courage, courage, courage.
You know, there's also the danger of people saying, I don't want to go through pain, and that's just not possible, right? I mean, you need to go through... I mean, well, not possible in the sense that you need to go through pain to appreciate and know happiness.
Listen, life is taking risks. You take risks, there's going to be failures, there's going to be disappointments, there's going to be aches and pains. There is no escape from pain, but you don't seek it intentionally, but you don't avoid it when it's there. And when it's there, you go through it and you come back to the joy of your job, of your life, or whatever has been broken.
And sometimes you deliberately have to find it. I mean, do things differently or, you know.
Yeah, 80% of people play not to lose, meaning they're afraid of pain. So they avoid this, they avoid that, they don't want to fail, they don't want to look silly. Playing to win means I am willing to take the necessary risks to live my life fully. And we have one life, as far as we know, in this realm. That's another discussion. But can we live it fully and be full of joy? And it's terrible when people in organizations are depressed and they're not, to the fellow employees, an inspiring person, but it's even worse for the family members, the spouses and the children, to not have joyful parents, joyful friends. And grief is the most devastating thing that happens to emotions. People just get locked down and they don't experience that joy or that curiosity.
Okay, you know, just a little bit about ME370 again. So this whole idea of communicating and talking, it should be filtered organization-wide. Everybody should have an opportunity to express themselves about it.
Yes, and be able to have someone that they can go and talk to when they feel something unusual. It affects their dreams or it affects how they're thinking. The worst that the managers can say is, chin up, go forward, forget about it. That's the worst. No, you don't want to coddle, but at the same time, you want to be caring. That's the point of the book, how to be a caring leader. And a caring leader simply shows interest, but they also dare. They have these honest conversations.
The 10 stages of grief is talking about, is there a time frame for,
you know? Yeah, that's a big question. You know, usually we talk about going through a year cycle, going through holidays, because that always brings up special losses, and then an 18-month cycle. And then there is the cycle that says you have some kind of grief about half the time you've been together. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a couple who's been married 40 years, that's going to take a while for them to get over that. But you can get over it and come back to the joy of life. But then stimulus will bring it back. So forgetting means that you don't just block it out of your mind, but that you're open to life and there will be stimuluses. I gave a commencement address for Webster University, and it brought back the memory of my son. And I think we've talked about this. I lost a son when he was 23. And that commencement address, unbeknownst to me, activated the grief of him being at that same age. And I had to pull myself in the right state, and I turned it into a positive experience because it was a positive memory of him. And it's possible to take anything and get over it, Frida.
How did you turn into that positive state? Here I am, tearing, talking to you.
Well, you have to be able to control how you focus your mind's eye. And you learn this from parents, from grandparents, teachers, bosses, counselors, to learn how to go through the emotion, because the emotion is there. But how do we control that emotion? We don't want to be a hostage to our emotion. So that as I walked down that stage, I thought I was going to lose it. But then I took deep breaths. I focused on what I remembered, my purpose, and then being able to change my mind's eye, my body, and come back to a state of being there to do what I'm doing and communicate. And one of the best things that you can do with people you've lost is to say, I live the rest of my life to honor them.
I live the rest of my life.
That's an old, old Native American Indian, and many cultures have that. You honor your ancestors.
Right. Okay. It's been, it's always interesting to speak to you.
You're very touched. I can see that. That, by the way, that is good. That is good to be touched. People who can't feel grief, they're in trouble. Big trouble.
Professor George Cole Reiser, it's Racy Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.